It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite teabagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Good morning and welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am your host, Mark Gillar. My special guest today is Jamie Johnson. She is the author of a book entitled Don't Take My Lemonade Stand, An American Philosophy. And this is a book that has been getting a lot of attention. And unlike some books that just sort of blip onto the radar screen and then go away, I have a feeling that this book is going to be selling for a long, long time. Janie, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, we actually met on Twitter, and I had the opportunity to learn a little bit about you and learn that you had written this book, and I immediately said, we've got to get Janie on the show. What's interesting about you is that I don't think you ever set out to have a career as a writer, did you?
No, I did not. Although I was an English major at UCLA, I've always enjoyed writing. But no, writing a book has never been a goal of mine.
And this all started with a question from your son, did it not?
Yes, it did. As we were watching TV and watching the election process unfold, my son, my 10-year-old son, asked me as we're having breakfast, well, Mommy, how do you know who to vote for? And I looked at him. I thought I did a really good mommy answer. I said, whoever gives less money to the government, whoever makes government smaller. And then, as only a child could ask, why? And those big brown eyes were staring at me. I was like, freedom isn't free. We have principles. Our founders fought for us. I was thinking of everything, all the flash, everything was flashing through my mind as he just was looking at me with like, please, Mommy, tell me the answer. So I went out to find a book that would help me better answer this question from everything that he should be learning in school, about our history, about what works versus what sounds good. But I couldn't find the book. But the alarming part is when I started looking for this book, I found out all the books that were teaching everything about why our founding principles were wrong. And that was just alarming to me. I've never been back in that section looking and seeing how many books on communism and socialism and praising the values of those. And then coupled with the fact that my son's teacher was a door-knocking, Obama-hanging, liberal who did not believe in the Founding Fathers nor the Constitution and believed in redistribution of wealth, I said, wow, I really need to take back what my kids are learning, all four of my kids. So therefore, my book turned into a book. And then I found other kids, and my friends wanted to know. So instead of just having a little discussion, it turned into a full-blown book that other people have found helpful also.
I know that your primary target for the book was children, but I have to tell you that it's, and I'm not finished with it yet, I'm going to be honest, but I can tell you that from what I've read, it's a nice refresher for all of us. I mean, this book is, it can teach parents how to teach kids about capitalism, about conservatism. Older kids can read the book on their own. But talk to me about the target age. What age child do you think could be given this book as far as just, you know, here, read this?
Well, that's what I made the different sections in the book to get them interested. The target age was fifth grade, with the 10-year-old, because that's when they start learning about the Declaration of Independence and the summary of the Declaration of Independence, where the teacher would leave out, you know, by our creator. The government is good for some of us, you know, to have an input on some of the government, you know, and trying to really teach back our kids what really isn't it, what the Declaration of Independence meant. You know, the story behind everything. Kids can go read a textbook, kind of, but not really. That's not fun. So what I tried to do was make it interesting. As my first attempt, as my then 13-year-old said, Mommy, this is really boring. It's all long. You need pictures. And that's mm-hmm. why I created the 51 illustrations done by a former Disney illustrator to illustrate the principles that we believe in action, of conservative kids working at the lemonade stand and the liberal kids, which I believe we really need to teach our kids. Not just why conservatism works, why limited government works, but we got to also teach our kids who doesn't believe in these principles. And by showing the liberal kids, which in my book I try to show that there are two kinds of liberals, the noble and the ignoble liberals. And the noble liberals, we have them. They'll do anything. It doesn't matter what it costs. The programs are great. We just didn't throw enough money at it. And the people who get it, the recipients, love the program. So therefore, we should throw more money. Those are what I try to show to my kids. Those are the noble liberals. And then we have the ignoble liberals, which are famous. They're on TV every day, demanding more and more of other people's money for themselves and their programs to buy votes. And so by showing the actual illustrations and the visuals of our principles in action using the lemonade stand as a metaphor, our kids really understood that. And not only that, in writing the book and having my kids help me with the illustrations and what kids would actually say, I found there was other questions my kids wanted to know. And then in doing that, I really needed to do summaries. As my friend who works 40, 60 hours, she has two jobs, she says, I don't have time to read a whole book. And not just her, but a lot of people are feeling the same way. They want to know. So I wanted the age to be the fifth grader that really is starting to understand and know the importance of casting informed votes and who our leaders are, but also to remind our everyday people who are out there working why, you know, the limited government works. Why is it bad that we're being overregulated and overtaxed? To get back to the founding principles of freedom, and that's what everything comes down to. And if we can't sell freedom and to show it why it works, then we are doomed.
Janie, I am so impressed that someone that had never written a book before was able to write something this clear and concise, something that just really makes the light bulb turn on. And I'm guessing it's because you did such a great job with this book, even though it was your very first effort, that you were able to get the likes of Steve Forbes, John Bolton, Lou Holtz, David Limbaugh to endorse this book. I mean, that's a big-time list of endorsers.
Sean Hannity, he's endorsed it too now. So
oh, excellent.
It was fun.
Excellent. I mean, how does a mom who writes a book in her spare time get people like this to endorse the book? I mean, that's just amazing.
Two words, relentless persistence. Well, I emailed every day. I write personal letters. I didn't write them every day, but on Monday, I would send out, at the beginning, 10 to 25 books every week. I said, there's a message here, there's an audience, and I need your help in trying to reach this audience. Could you please help? Our kids deserve a better future. We need to remind everyday people, you know, why, what are the Tea Parties about? Why is this big push for bigger and bigger government? Why do people believe in redistribution of wealth? Why is our national media, I refuse to call them mainstream media, keep ignoring the past failures of central planners, of status, and they keep pushing more bigger and bigger government? So we really need to take back, and the only way we're going to win this fight is through education. And that's been my big push through my book, through my messages, my radio interviews, Twitter. I want to educate people and remind them. Everybody knows this. We just need to be reminded of the American way, of what works versus their way, of what only merely sounds good. And when we can make this clear distinction, people will know, and so when Election Day comes, November 6, 2012, it's not just going to be a shellacking, it's going to be a tsunami.
What school districts have you been able to get this book into? Because I think it should be used by every school district in America, but given the stronghold that liberals have on our American school system, I know that's not going to happen, but it's my understanding that you've been able to get this book into some schools. Tell us about that.
Yes, when I first went on Fox Business News American Scoreboard with David Asman, that was his question he asked me. He goes, if you should be getting this to all the schools, how are you going to be able to do that? I was like, you know, I had a better answer now, of course. But I said, you know, we're just going to have to keep working on it and getting them put in. So actually, in my hometown, in my school district, it's in all six of our elementary schools, both middle schools and our high school. And my kids' friends say, oh, my God, I saw your mom's book at school. And it's been in all of Northern Nevada. There's 10 different counties of Republican women have bought the books. Their library committees have bought the book and put it in their schools. And I have some South Texas schools. I have Michigan schools. I have some up in Wisconsin, some schools and Christian schools. So it's spreading around. And that it is hard when you have liberal educators who believe that the unions know best and the parents don't, that they believe in their way of teaching against our way. So we just really need to take back who's teaching our kids and what they're learning. And it's just going to be relentless persistence. It's a fight worth winning. I believe our children are worth it.
Have you met with resistance as you've tried to get this book into schools? Have there been any places where liberal parents have threatened to file lawsuits and said, I don't want this capitalism nonsense, this conservative nonsense, this lunacy about the founding fathers, the Constitution being taught in our schools. Have you encountered that anywhere as of yet?
Not to my face yet. Not at all to my face. In fact, a lot of people are like, wow, you're courageous. I can't believe you're doing this. You're putting yourself out there. I said, what is courage but standing up for the principles for what you believe? And that's what I wanted to teach my kids, is that when you have your principles and theories, is to help you organize your thought, all your thoughts about how to make these decisions, and what is the ultimate purpose of organized thought is to help decide a course of action. And our course of action has been laid out by our founding fathers. They gave us this path to peace and prosperity, and they give us the principles. And that's why we can take a stand for this. I tell my friends, this isn't hard. I'm just taking a stand for what works. You look at history, it's a principles, limited government. What could be wrong? You know, government has enough money. It's limited resources. We just need to have priorities. And, you know, we can argue over the priorities. You want more social programs? I believe we need to have a strong defense. Let's cut out all the waste and fraud. And then once we run out of money at, like, number 7, then we have to stop spending. They agree with it. So if you put it in simple terms, people are like, wow, that's not really, you know, I don't know why people are attacking you. But on the idea of getting the book into the schools, it has been hard because the PTAs just don't have enough power behind them anymore to put the books and control the libraries. And it is the school districts that do it. It has to pass the school board requirement list. And in conservative counties, I found it's worked. But in the liberal counties, my friends in L.A., they couldn't get it in.
Well, if someone would like to take on this task of trying to get your book into their school system, how I'm assuming they could contact you for advice because you've been through it a few times and you know how it works. How can they contact you?
On my website at jjauthor.com, and I have an email, contact the author, and I'm always open for it. You can contact me on Twitter at jjauthor, and I try to get to all my app messages. I try to talk to every person. But I get sent into Twitmo, you know, Twitter prison for all of us who talk too much on Twitter. So I have to take a break, which is good. So I'm going to take care of my 4 boys and get my husband some dinner. all my time. But, yeah, it's just a fight that we're going to have, and we need to do it. And I believe it's worth fighting for.
We have made references to the liberals having control of the school system. I personally believe that there are a lot of things that have to happen to a nation before you can institute socialism or communism. And one of them is you have to dumb down the schools. You have to stop teaching true history. You have to strip away the morals of a nation. And let's give the liberals credit. Between what Hollywood and, you know, television are doing to our morals, and you add that to what's going on in the public school system, they're doing a good job. They're very patient. Let me give you an example. I had a young lady that I was discussing politics with one day, and she was not long out of college. She might have been 24 at the most. And I made a reference to communism, and her response was, communism, that's the bad one, right? And this was a 24-year-old who actually made very good grades in school. It is not her fault. She was never taught the differences between various forms of government. Now, I know that you said before you began writing the book, one of the things you did was you wanted to see where your children were in terms of their knowledge of history and government, so you gave them a little quiz, and you realized that some teaching was in order. Tell us about that. How did you come up with this informal testing, and what were the results?
Well, what I did was, about the same time my son had asked me this question, I had no idea. I was not going to write a book, but I said to my husband, you know, I came up with 4 or 5 principles I think our kids really need to know. And my husband stared at me, and he's like, only 4 or 5? And so he went, and at the same time, our friends had sent us the citizenship test for America. It came, you know, on an email, how it comes around to you. And so I said, wow. I said, I passed. I missed 2. I thought, wow, and I missed 2. I gave it to my kids. They had, like, 3 of them right. I think they're kids. You know, I'm a 7th and 8th grader at the time. And they only got, like, 2 or 3 answers right. And that just shocked me. that our immigrants coming into our country know more about our history of America than our own kids. It's just part of the apathy that's going on, and that we really need to take back, as I said before, what our kids are learning and the history. Because history in and of itself, you know, is boring, this and that. But when you can tell a story of it and show why we have history, because it shares all of our what has worked and what hasn't worked, and we all share it in common. And that we can show why the communism doesn't work and the different forms of government. You know, and my kids, they understood that. And so now when things come on TV, they're like, wow, ooh, this or that. And in fact, my son, he was taking AP World History, probably got marked off on a few. He has a very socialist type teacher. I won't call him communist, but close. You know, he had UN questions, you know, and this whole new world order and so forth. And my son, you know, he took a stand, you know, for our Constitution. And, you know, and he got sent in the hallway because, you know, they wanted to show Inconvenient Truth. He says, okay, if you show that, you have to. We get to watch Superman also. And they didn't like that so much. So, you know, when you teach your kids to take a stand for what you believe, it's all a learning process. So all these things combine to show my kids what they didn't know, what they learned. And I got the 8th grade U.S. history textbook out. I looked for the word capitalism. It wasn't even to be found. But I did have free enterprise system. That was good in two paragraphs. But the whole, you know, as you know, the whole foundation of America is built on this experiment our founders gave us, free market capitalism. They gave us this ladder that allows us to climb out of the hole that we were born into. Some of us have better parents, better circumstances that we've been born into. But thousands of years ago, people were born into a big hole of poverty and despair. And even some people today are, you know, depending who your father is or who you know. But capitalism allows you to climb that ladder to be successful, rugged individualism, and to climb as how far and as how high that you want to climb. And we just needed the government not to keep throwing dirt on our face and make that hole bigger. We don't want their help, and we for sure don't want them to hinder our climb. And so when we start teaching these simple metaphors and examples to our kids, they are not learning in school. They're for sure not learning on TV. All these things combined really showed my kids really needed to be able to learn, but not just in a boring way, you know, but an exciting way with illustrations, you know, pictures, simple examples that kids could understand and to learn why our history is important.
How did you decide to use the lemonade stand as a metaphor? I know you credited someone at the beginning of the book for helping you come up with that. How did that come about?
I have to be honest, I backed into it. I had, you know, my son had said, I had call-outs in the book. I had a lemonade stand. I had art projects. I had the grade analogy. I had all these different analogies that really came home to my kids. I was trying to explain different things. And I had the lemonade stand metaphor in there. I had it in there about 15 times. I had my kids actually drawn the pictures with stick people, kind of make it kid-like so they don't understand. I had the kids saying everything. Mm-hmm. And then we're visiting our friends, and I said, okay, you guys are not going to believe this. I haven't seen them for a year, my friends, down in Southern California. And I said, okay, I've written this book. And it was like a mom's mission to teach your kids common sense conservatism. You know, it was one of my titles. I don't know what they won at the time. And my friend's looking at it, and she's like, oh, my God, this is great. This is great. She goes, but you need a better title. She goes, you need Don't Take My Lemonade Stand. And I said, oh, my God, that's really good. And so then it took me, you know, 2 or 3 months to not have people talk me out of it. And so that really stuck. People got it. They got the attention of it. And they were like, oh, aren't you being a little bit, you know, unreal? That nobody's going to take anybody's lemonade stand. And sure enough, I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, you just, anybody can foresee when you have this much government, so much government, that you have these bureaucrats, and who do they want to go get? They don't want to get the big guy, the drug dealers and stuff. They'll go attack the easy targets, the kids, you know, to show their power. And so it was just been a fantastic title to really show the illustration, the metaphor of too big a government.
Now, when you say don't take my lemonade stand, are you referencing situations or referring to situations where kids have put up lemonade stands and the local health department shows up and wants to see their three-bay sink and their permit and all that kind of stuff? Or
well, it just kind of, well, part of it was, and then my older son, my husband has three older sons. I call them my sons, although, you know, my stepsons officially. And he has a small business, a battery store, and he was just laughing about all the permits and the disposal of his batteries, and they make them take back batteries, but yet they don't give them a place to take them to. And so he's like, okay, I got all these batteries, but now what am I supposed to do? So the whole lemonade stand metaphor, it really just represents free market capitalism, and just to show our kids that capitalism is a vehicle that frees us and gives us opportunities to, you know, to get out of that station in life we were born into, to be the master of our own fate. Plus, it also represents the other founding principles that make America great, you know, our individual rights and liberties, and especially our property rights, which are so intertwined with our freedom that the government keeps taking away by rules and regulations. You can have a piece of property, but it's not really yours, only if you follow their thousands of pages of regulations. And so I just wanted to, you know, just show people that it's just not the lemonade stand. It's everything the lemonade stand represents. And it's just not a warning to government. It's about our whole American way of life, about the foundation American way. You know, our first experience with the business is the lemonade stand. And from that, our innovation of a lemonade stand carries us on into a bigger life with bigger businesses.
Talk to me about the projects that have grown out of this, because I'm talking to you from Bryan College Station, Texas, and I know here the conservatives had a lemonade stand day, and my son's in college and too old to participate in something like that, but throughout our neighborhood, I saw the lemonade stands being set up. I'm guessing that was something that was sort of a spinoff from your book?
Oh, I'd like to take credit for that. But there was a guy out of Texas who came up the lemonade stand day. He was an entrepreneur. I want to say his name's Terry something. But he basically wanted to teach kids actual business rules and philosophy of business about the supplies, wages, demands, location, actual business principles that can be applied to any business to help kids, to show them, you know, about selling, about profit, and about how you use your product to grow and be innovative, and that's what the American dream is about, and to help show kids these great fundamental principles that basically they're not taught anywhere.
It's a shame. I know that when I hear stories about liberals dabbling in education, for instance, almost every surviving member of the Weather Underground is working in education somewhere right now, or was working. I think Bill Ayers has resigned. I hear these stories about how Barack Obama and Bill Ayers basically wasted a lot of money with the Chicago Annenberg Challenge, you know, not improving one single test score because their great idea was that public schools should merge with activist groups. In fact, the public schools couldn't get the money directly. They had to get it through activist groups, as I understand it. You know, and then whenever I hear stories about La Raza having their own schools where they teach the kids that America is a horrible place, I feel that there is such a need to fight back. And this book is a tool to do that. Now, you mentioned in your book that the book is, in fact, a call to action. Let's say right now I'm a parent. I'm home listening to this. I'm fed up with the liberals in the school. I'm sick of an inconvenient truth being shown in my schools, and I want to fight back. I want to get this book into my school, and I want to do whatever I can. Lay out a little agenda for us as to what some of these people might do to get their feet wet and start getting into this type of activism, conservative activism.
First and foremost, it's education. I'm a big message is we need to get educated, get informed, and then you get engaged. And getting back into our schools and getting a book such as mine, getting the real history book, what's his name, Swyfkoff's Patriot's History of the United States, A True History, getting these kinds of books back into our schools, teaching the whole Declaration of Independence, teaching the Constitution, the story of it, why it's important, and not only that, what happens when you don't have it. These are ways that people can get in to get activated and get engaged in our schools. So you have to go to the school board and demand it. And you know that you have to elect school board members who believe in conservatism. And what is conservatism? This is the huge thing for me, Mark, that I found when I first started. Nobody knew what the word being a conservative meant. And I say it was conserving our founding principles. and basically, and they're rooted in freedom, in limited government. People had no idea, like, that makes sense. It was just amazing is the apathy and the people who not paid attention. And one of my best friends is, I had a bad history teacher. So first off, I think we need to get educated, and as I said before, about the courage to take a stand for your principles. But first you have to decide what your principles are. You know, not every person will agree 100% with me, but a lot of them do. Everyone says, oh, there's just one thing I didn't agree on. You know, and I say, oh, what was that? And then I talk to them, they're like, well, yeah, that does make sense. So just getting people to think for themselves, getting our kids to think for themselves, to going to the school board, that's great. Getting the book out there, but basically taking back what our kids are learning. Sit down with your kids and show them. And that's why I made my book, 42 Short Chapters. And you could start anywhere, any page. And the 51 illustrations were meant to be 51 talking points to facilitate talking between parents and kids. So the kids could ask questions, well, why did the conservative kid, you know, I want to earn my own way. And the liberal kid says, no, the government can take care of that. So you're determining what is the role of government without saying, okay, the role of government is blah, blah, blah. And so it really helps. And then the parents are like, my friend was Kathy. She's like, I don't really know what the role of government is. You know, but I was great. You know, my parents were Republicans. So we're finding this whole idea of the apathy and people are really getting back, wanting to be educated. So I say the first thing that parents can do to get this book into school, get the book, read it, share it with their kids, share it with their friends, and take it to the school boards and say, hey, we need more teaching of our American foundation and the Declaration of Independence, and here's a book that will help.
Well, I think that's certainly a good start. I would like to see the Tea Parties in America take over every school board they can get their hands on. Liberals have had control.
That's better.
Yeah, I think liberals have had control of the schools for far too long. Janie, I wish I had time in the time that we have left to discuss with you all the emails that I've received from parents who are frustrated if their kids said they were for McCain during the last election, that the teacher would belittle them in front of the class. I have parents who have kids in college who say that children in college aren't even allowed to say they disagree with man-made global warming without incurring the wrath of the professor. I know a lady whose son wants to eventually get involved in U.S. intelligence work, and they're being forced to write papers on how global warming is affecting America's national security. And her son doesn't believe that man-made global warming is a serious threat, but if he wants to get out of the class, he's going to have to pretend that the emperor is wearing clothes. So I have received so many letters from parents who are upset with the school system, not just at the grade school or high school level, but also at the collegiate level as well. And the first step is going to be taking back our schools. I had Star Parker on a few weeks ago, and Star was saying how she believed the voucher system was a great idea. My son went to a private school from kindergarten through 12th, graduated with honors, and now he's got a 4.0 at a major university. And I can tell you, Janie, that the cost of educating my son was one-third what the local school district spends per student at this private school. So it's not a question of doing what the liberals always do, and that's throwing more money at a situation. It's a matter of getting the parents involved, putting the right books in the school system, and allowing children freedom of speech. Isn't it amazing that our children don't have the freedom in school to admit that they're for the Republican candidate or that they think Al Gore is full of it? I mean, it's absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. Now, I want to tell people how to get your book before we get you off, but before we do that, I am going to very quickly, I'm going to do this while we're on the air, I am going to select a winner for the nice, generous copy of the book that you have provided me, and our winner is R.D. Wink. And we're going to be sending RD an email to tell him or her how they can claim their free copy of Don't Take My Lemonade Stand by Janie Johnson. And for the rest of you, unfortunately, who did not win, Janie, tell them how they can get a copy of your book.
It's available on Amazon. It's available on my website at jjauthor.com for bulk buys. I sell it at my cost for five copies or more. trying to get it into schools. That's off my website. You can buy it directly off my website, too. The same price as Amazon. Doesn't really matter. It's available on all digital formats for your iPad, to Kindle, to the Sony Reader, the Nook. And I just want to say thank you, Mark. And a funny story was, when I was in college, I used to wear a Reagan Bush T-shirt. My father built nuclear power plants. So you can imagine, you know, my nuclear power shirts and my Reagan Bush T-shirt.
Wow. At UCLA.
Yeah. And then my brother, he's funny, he sent my oldest son a Rush Limbaugh T-shirt to wear for his biology teacher, who has her whole car plastered with global warming stickers. So needless to say, he didn't do so well in biology.
Oh, that, you know, that's a shame. I mean, that is a real shame that kids expressing their true beliefs are treated this way in the school system. There ought to be a method for dealing with these teachers who push a liberal slash socialist slash communist agenda. And we can talk about global warming another time, but I've probably had at least a dozen experts who are skeptics of global warming on this show. And I got to tell you, we're talking about kids and how kids are affected. One of my guests, Ann McElhaney, has come up with lesson plans for schools that would like to, for parents who want to have their teachers provide an alternative viewpoint on man-made global warming. And maybe we can create.
Yeah.
I think what we can do, in fact, I'm having this inspiration. The light bulb is going on while I'm talking to you. I want to, I guess, create a special section of my TeaPartyPowerHour.com website, and we're going to put your book on there. There are some books on there about how parents can explain to their kids that global warming is not a major concern. We'll try to get those lesson plans on there and see if we can't start giving parents some tools to fight back with. We have very little time left. Tell the folks at home one more time how they can get your book.
Oh, thank you. Don't Take My Lemonade Stand is available on Amazon and on my website at jjauthor.com. And thanks for having me. It's a great show.
Fantastic. I really enjoyed having you on the show. Before I bring on my next guest, I want to talk to you about something that frankly isn't that comfortable for any of us. There is much talk of the U.S. dollar being dropped as the world reserve currency and of hyperinflation taking place right here in the United States as a result of it. But whether the disaster is economic or perhaps natural in nature, I have one question for you. Are you prepared? Would your family have clean water to drink? Would they have good food to eat? Would you have a way to keep your most vital pieces of electrical equipment operating should the power grid go down? If you've answered no to any of these, you owe it to yourself to check out the products available from Solutions from Science. Simply go to TeaPartyPowerHour.com and scroll down to the bottom of the page and look for the links that are there. Peace of mind is just one mouse click away. And now, back to the show. My next guest is Carol Greenberg. I referred to her the last time she was on the air as the undercover conservative, but now she's all out in the open telling us about a new computerized system that could level the playing field between Democrats and Republicans. The system is known as Our Votes. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Now, the last time you were here, we had Anita Moncrief on with you, and you were telling us about the time that you went undercover with Obama for America, or maybe it was Organizing for America then, and you were just drooling over this database system that they had that was light years beyond anything we have on the Republican side. When you showed captures, screen captures to Anita Moncrief, she verified that this was the same system that they were using at Acorn whenever she was there. So this computerized system that the Democrats have, that it's been referred to as Obama's secret weapon, ties together everybody, probably the labor unions, Acorn, the official Democratic Party. And up until now, there hasn't been an opportunity for Republicans to have anything like this. But now you're telling me that opportunity does exist in the form of a program called Our Votes. Tell us what that is, and tell us how you came to find out about it.
Our Votes was built by one of the two people who built the Vote Builder site that Obama for America and the Democratic National Committee uses. His name is Mark Adler. In the early 2000s, he and a man named Mark Sullivan created a company called Voter Activation Network, or VAN. VAN has now merged with another progressive website designer company called NGP. They are now NGP VAN. They build websites for progressives and for Democrats only, and they advertise that on their website, but they will not work with Republicans or conservative groups. So what had happened is, a few years ago, the founders of VAN, Sullivan and Adler, for whatever reason, split the company up. Adler bought his half out. He went his own way, and after a five-year non-compete clause, he is building the same secret weapon for Republicans and conservatives only. And I have to say here that Adler was never a Democrat. He's a registered independent. He's a capitalist, which in my eyes is what, you know, makes this country great. He was in this for the money, and now he's in it for the money and to help out conservatives and Republicans and level the playing field, as you say. So the way this occurred was, I got a surprise email about 6 weeks ago from a gentleman who had run across my OFA articles and said, hey, you know, I know this guy, Steve Adler, who was part of, you know, Voter Activation Network, building the website for Obama and the DNC, and now he's doing the same thing for Republicans and conservatives. So I'm going to need you on board because you have seen the vote builder system actually operating, and you can testify or, you know, be a witness that this is the same exact database system for Republicans as the Democrats have. So that's how this all started.
Well, that's certainly a very interesting story. Now, to make sure that I understand this completely, this guy, and his name is Steve Adler, was sure. Partners with someone else named Sullivan. They had a company called Voter Action Network, or VAN, for whatever reason.
Voter Activation Network.
Okay, and it was called VAN for short. And that company has now merged with a company called NGP, and they still market exclusively to Democrats. Now, for whatever reason, Steve Adler has decided that he's going to market his version of the program, I guess exclusively to Republicans, with a name like Our Votes. So tell me, what is your goal with this? I mean, a database program is no good without a database to put into it. How do we get the Republicans to implement this, and how do we start loading the software database package with actual data so that it becomes an effective weapon? I mean, right now it's kind of like a gun without any bullets in it. And please, nobody go out and shoot anybody because I said that.
Well, Mr. Adler lives in Rhode Island, and he actually built the GOP Rhode Island website at no charge, and they are using the exact same system that he built for the Dems vote builder. So after some negotiation, I convinced him that he needed to get this same system into a battleground state like Ohio. And one of the advantages of Ohio is that the voter registration records can be downloaded into any system at no charge. A lot of states charge a huge amount of dollars to download voter registration files. For example, Wisconsin charges $12,500. In Ohio, it's free. So since Mr. Adler could download all this voter registration information for free, and with his database system that he already had taken away under his whatever deal he had with his former partner, we sort of made a deal that, you know, maybe you should get this into Ohio and let some people here run with it and get some candidates involved. So that's what's happened now. We've got this data. It's in Ohio. I've been in the system. All the voter registration files are there, 8.5 million of them, and it's a sight to behold. Granted, we have to, you know, fill the system with emails and phone numbers and survey information and so forth, and it's going to be up to us to get a lot of volunteers, Tea Party groups, and conservative groups on board to do that. But that just happened just 2 days ago, so we're very, very new with this. But we have the advantage that it's already preloaded with all the voter information records in it.
What is special about this database? Because I know you were drooling over it, not the database itself, but the software that allows you to access the database. And I know you were drooling over it the last time you came on the show, but what makes this different from any other database program? What's so special about it? Tell the people at home why you think this could be the great equalizer when it comes to helping the Republicans catch up in their electronic marketing.
Because there's just so much that this system can do. Let me read you some of the things that it can do. It has voter contact, voter registration drive, early absentee vote by mail, real-time get out the vote. It's smartphone compatible, meaning that you'll be able to download information into a smartphone, compile that information going door-to-door, and then upload it back into the database system, can manage your volunteers. And another wonderful aspect of the system is every voter has a barcode. So, for example, if you want to do a survey going door to door, all you do is print out a sheet of the voters on your walk list. They're all barcoded. And you make a survey, and then the walker marks on his survey what the answer to the question is, and then using a barcode reader, all those answers can be immediately uploaded back into the system, and they can be matched with that individual voter.
Hmm, that is interesting.
Yes, yes. It's a wonderful time saver. And also, we can do phone banking. It's micro-targeting, for example. Mr. Adler showed me how we could pull the mothers of draft-age men and call them on the phone or send emails or do whatever we want with that group. We can target people from 18 to 35, we can, you know, do a search and pull out all those names in a certain precinct or a certain congressional district and do a blast email or phone banking with a survey question or with, you know, some sort of targeting as far as an issue. This is very good when we work with students around the universities who are, you know, very, very active in phone banking and issues, and it's just a wonderful tool to have as far as how you can sort. It's called macro nano targeting. I mean, you could pull out 3 people in one precinct from 18 to 25 according to how they voted and how their parents were registered to vote if you want to do that.
It certainly sounds like it's allowing for pinpoint target marketing, to say the least. Now, I assume eventually cell phone numbers could be put in there, and if you needed to do a text blast out to these people, you could or not?
yes, eventually that will be coming on board. As far as I understand right now, because of the lack of capital, there's a few things that are missing on the Ohio site, but 90% of what Vote Builder has is there right now. And it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful tool for us to use. It's the exact same tool that the left has been using for the last 10 years, and now we'll be able to use their same tool in the same way that they're using it, only on our side.
Now, in order to make this thing go national, what do you need? Does the Republican Party have to sign off on it? Because obviously they could come up with the $3 million rather easily. Who do you want to get this thing into the hands of? And, I mean, how do you see it playing itself out in terms of how this software is rolled out and how the strategies are implemented using the software?
Well, as far as Ohio goes, what we have right now it's in the hands of the grassroots and conservative groups. Now, the RNC and any GOP candidates, conservative candidates, are welcome to come on board. The way that Mr. Adler has now made it for Ohio, it is free for all the Tea Parties and conservative groups and from all the races from mayor on down. So any of the races, for example, U.S. Senator, state representatives, U.S. congressional representatives, they would be charged on a sliding scale according to the level of candidacy that they have. But this system is a system where all the data goes into one data warehouse. And the advantage of this is that the data can be shared nationwide. The other advantage is that groups within this database system can choose whether or not they want to share their information with another group or a campaign. For example, if we have Jim Jordan in Ohio, he's running for re-election for Congress. If he signs on to this system, he will have the access to, depending on how much he pays, he'll have access to the whole system or to part of the system. He may choose to share his information with my Tea Party group or his Tea Party group, or he may not choose to share his information with anybody else. That's the beauty of this. It's based on permissions. We will assign volunteers and anybody that comes on board that uses the system a level so that they will only have access to certain areas of the database system depending on the trust factor that we have for them. Am I making any sense?
Oh, yeah, you are. It's fascinating. My gut feeling after listening to you is that you would rather keep this program in the hands of the grassroots, with the idea that the Republicans can, you know, come on board when they need to use it, but you really don't want them taking ownership of it. Am I too far off with that?
You're correct on that. Adler's goal is to put this into the hands of the grassroots. Now, I can't speak what's in his mind on this, but this is what his goal is to keep it out of the hands of, you know, the RNC as far as the controlling factor. Now, they're certainly welcome to come on board as paying customers and use the system. However, right now, Ohio, it's in the hands of the grassroots. I already have it. I've been in the system, and it's absolutely fantastic. And I don't know if I mentioned before, but I absolutely cried like a baby when I saw the Vote Builder website because I was so distraught over what I saw. And when I saw Our Votes for Ohio, I cried again because it's the exact same system that the Democrats have. So we can level the playing field drastically. It's the exact same tool built by the same man who built their own website database interface.
Well, I'm laughing inside here because there aren't that many people who cry when they see political software. But that shows your commitment to the cause, and I admire that. So I'm not picking on you. I think it's interesting, but certainly demonstrative of your passion and your commitment to what you're doing.
Well, Mark, you have to remember, and I need to point this out, that I had been watching OFA for a couple of years now, and this vote builder database interface system is what got Obama elected as a president. It's the same system that got the health care bill passed. It's the same system that got welfare reform, or not welfare, Wall Street reform passed. It's the same system that tossed Blanche Lincoln on the health care bill. It's the same system that tossed Scott Brown on the Wall Street reform bill. So now it's very exciting for me to see the same system that's going to be in the hands of the Republicans and conservatives. And, you know, when you think about Vote Builder, we think that they have 280 million voters in that system. And we're not counting magazine subscriptions and any other database system that their data warehouse Catalyst may have put back into their system. We're talking about all the emails and the cell phone numbers and the data that's been accumulated in different precincts around the country. I mean, Vote Builder is truly amazing. However, I'm not negating the amount of work that's ahead of us as far as our votes. Because if you look back and see how many years it took the Democrats to compile and upload all this information as far as demographics and cell phones and emails, it took them years. So for us, this is not something that's going to happen overnight. But we're on our way. We have the tool, and we hope it goes viral and it goes nationwide. That's
now,
what my hope is.
You said 280 million registered voters. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because we've only got about 300 million people and some change in America, and some of those are kids, and a lot of them aren't registered voters. That number sounds high. I mean, not to pull out my critical cap, but that just seems like a really high number. I mean, that's everybody. That's Republicans and Democrats. I mean, that's everybody.
I'm not saying this is what the data warehouse system Catalyst is telling us.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know what Catalyst is.
If I'm not mistaken, well, I'm looking at your press release. It says that the database, that's the actual database, correct, is Catalyst. Vote Builder is the software, and the database in and of itself is called Catalyst. Is that correct?
No. The database interface system is called Vote Builder.
Right.
They got their information from a data warehouse, which is named Catalyst.
Okay.
Catalyst holds all the information. How do I explain this? Based on how much money you have or you want to expend, you buy information from Catalyst. Now, Catalyst, they advertise that they have 280 million names, but we're thinking that they probably also have names of illegals in there, too, but we can't be sure.
And so probably dead people, because, as you know, Democrats allow them to vote.
Exactly. So, but we're not privy to that information. This
gotcha.
Is what they're advertising that they have.
Okay. So, the goal obviously is to spread this to every state in the nation, but at first, realizing that there are costs involved, the battleground states. So what are you doing to reach, I know you're on the show tonight, but what are you doing to reach out to various other grassroots organizations across the country and to have this thing spread across the country?
Well, I know there's already a lot of information out there. I've used Twitter. I've used Facebook. I've used all my email contacts. I've used contacts that I know through Anita Moncrief and all her connections. And also, I'm not sure if I told you, but Anita has come on board as one of the advisors to our votes, which will lend a lot of credibility to the system. And also, I am the grassroots representative on that system. So right now, we're just reaching out to the Tea Parties and anyone, any conservative group that we can think of to get this viral and get it on blogs and make it go nationwide. I think we've come a long way in 6 weeks. 6 weeks ago, I didn't even know about this system. Now we have a board of advisors. We've got the word out. It's been put out right online. We've got a lot of interest. We've already got our votes in Ohio. It's not live yet. It's going to go live on July the 1st. However, I'm privileged to be one of the first who's been able to access the site and see what the power of this database is. And I can testify that it's exactly like Vote Builder. So I'm very, very optimistic that when the word gets out, we'll get some paying customers. And this will go nationwide because, you know, obviously we can't do this at no cost. This database system is very expensive. There's a lot of skill involved. There's a lot of IT technology involved. There needs to be people hired. There needs to be training. There needs to be maintenance of the system. So none of this is for free. So that's why we're hoping to get, you know, paying candidates on board with this system. And once the word gets out about how powerful the system is, you know, they're going to tell others, and eventually, hopefully, we'll get it in a lot of the states that really, really matter.
Well, right now, as we come to the close of the interview, we've got a couple minutes left. How can Tea Party leaders throughout the country who would like to bring this system to their Tea Party find out more about it, contact you, give it maybe a test drive, and also what kind of cost would an individual Tea Party be looking at in order to be able to use this system?
The cost schedule has not been worked out yet. I have to tell you, though, that it's going to be considerably less than any other system out there, even though this system is far superior. Mr. Adler is working on a fee schedule right now. However, for Tea Parties, I'm thinking we talked about less than $100 a month, maybe even $50 a month, but that's not written in stone yet. But
okay.
As far as Ohio, there's no charge for that.
And again, right now, if somebody's listening and thinks, boy, I'd like to find out more about this, maybe give it a test spin, kick the tires, how can they contact you, Carol?
Okay, you can give them, right now I prefer not to be, let me think, I prefer, they can email me.
Okay.
You can give them an email address.
Okay, we'll post that on our website.
And Mr. Adler can do demos. However, he would prefer to get a group together. It doesn't matter if they're from one state or from a bunch of states. However, you know, I have to say that we're hoping, as far as demos go, that we might get some interest from some paying customers as well as, you know, the Tea Parties because, and as I mentioned before, in order to make this a viable system, there are costs involved.
Of course.
I mean, Mr. Adler cannot do this for free.
Understandable. Well, now, if somebody does want to do this, talk to me about the software and accessing the database. What would the requirements be on one's computer in order to be able to handle this system?
As far as myself handling the system, I just have an HP laptop, and I'm able to get
okay.
into the system and do everything. Now, you know, obviously, I can't download 8.5 million voters, and I wouldn't want to do that. I would just want to target maybe my district or a district that we know that goes Democratic and try and turn them around, you know, as far as Republican, or talk to them about the issues. So we would target a certain precinct or a certain congressional district. For example, the Cleveland area right now is very liberal, and I don't know if you're aware that Kucinich is losing his district due to redistricting.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, but he says he's going to run for another office, however, yet he's not stated what office that's going to be. So we hope to get this into Cleveland heavily and target, you know, the liberals and the Democrats there, and let them know, you know, what's been going on in the country and how conservatives and Republicans can help make their lives easier and better, and hopefully vote for a Republican in 2012.
Absolutely. Well, I got to tell you, Carol, I'm very impressed with everything you've done. I mean, the way you went undercover at Organizing for America and got a chance to look at this database, excuse me, this software package being used on the other side. And then just by being, you know, a true activist and having your name out there, you were visible enough that someone approached you on it. And now you've brought something to our side that could be the game breaker, not only in the national election, but in small elections, you know, throughout the country. I think the press release from Our Votes said right down to the city dog catcher race.
Right, exactly.
Although I don't know that that's often contested along ideological lines.
Yeah.
I don't know. Normally that's one of those popularity contest type of things, I would suppose.
Right.
Okay, well, Carol, I really appreciate you being here with us today, and I look forward to having you back as this progresses along, and I will do what I can through my mailing list to get the word out about Our Votes, not only to Tea Party leaders throughout the country, but also to some well-placed conservative journalists, and hopefully that will help you out as well.
Thank you, and may I add one other thing at the
Certainly.
End? Do we have time for that? Okay. I would like to say that Our Votes is extremely user-friendly.
Okay.
It's very, very easy to use. There's a spot and there's a level for anyone. So just because you may feel that you don't have any computer skills, that shouldn't stop anyone, because we can have you just add phone numbers and emails, and if you're comfortable with just doing that, that's fine. We can just have you put in who wants to have a yard sign in their yard, or who's willing to have a yard sign, or who's willing to make phone calls. There's a spot for everyone in the system, and that's the beauty of the system. No one should or should have to be afraid to be shut out, because it's not complicated at all.
Well, that's very good information to have, and it's kind of been wonderful to watch people grab a hold of technology over the last decade. You know, I went from someone probably before the last election whose experience on the computer was pretty much surfing the net and sending and receiving emails, to someone who has three websites, a radio talk show, and a social networking site for global warming skeptics. So it's been great to watch conservatives latch on to newer technologies that we weren't harnessing the power of, and this is just a great example, you know, of what can be done whenever someone's dedicated and keeps going out there and swinging away at it the way you've done. So, hey, let me give you a hat tip and say great work, Carol.
Okay, thanks, Mark, for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me today. I want to remind everyone that the TeaPartyPowerHour.com website has been totally revamped. We now have so many ways that you can keep up with the show. We have a Twitter connection, a Facebook connection. You can follow us on YouTube. You can download the show for free via RSS feed or iTunes. There are also links that will allow you to write me directly and subscribe to the Tea Party Telegram, the official newsletter of the Tea Party Power Hour .com. Just go to teapartypowerhour.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and look for all those buttons that will help you access the different services that we provide. Thanks again for joining us today, and don't forget, my very special guest next week is going to be Ann Coulter. That interview should post on Saturday, July the 2nd by 10 a.m. Central Time. I hope you'll join me.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.